accessibility. Perhaps this doesn't seem to matter to you right now, but I bet once you've heard what Jonathan Nadeau has to say, you may change your mind. I certainly did. I have great eyesight, but still enjoy the screen zooming, and now I'm thinking about installing and using Okra to read things to me when I'm feeling lazy. So, don't miss the first fundraiser for the AccessibilityComputingFoundation.org. It'll be held on Saturday, August the 25th from 12 p.m. Eastern until 12 a.m. Eastern. Yes, that's a crazy 12-hour podcast streaming live at thenewradio.net, or have your say and ask questions via the Mumble server with up to 300 other people, and help make this the success and proof of how beautiful Linux and the amazing community is. Why accessibility? In short, right now, accessibility on a computer carries a big price tag, which keeps many of those people who really could benefit out in the cold, as some 70% of disabled people who need the software can't afford it. Or for some lucky people, if the government does pick up the tab for the overpriced proprietary software, then we, the taxpayer, are helping these proprietary companies make an easy profit, which by all accounts they aren't really putting into fixing and supporting what they currently have. The goal for this fundraiser is to have 1,000 people become members of the ACF at $2 a month. There are 3 other levels of membership, but even just spreading the awareness of this great event and efforts by Jonathan Nadeau and others will flex the big muscles of the Floss community and
the power of the penguins.
So take a look at Accessible Computing Foundation at theacf.co or linuxbasics.com. That's BASIX.com, where the Lars blog post has all this information as well. And mark your calendar for a 12-hour marathon on Saturday, August the 25th, from 12 p.m. Eastern until 12 a.m. Eastern. Drop in and show your support, even if you can't make the whole 12 hours. Hey, who of us are penguin enough for that marathon?
Hi, this is Ken, and you are?
I'm Becky Newer.
And we would know you from your sterling work at the Crunchbang project, I guess.
Yes, but I also have other talents.
And what will those talents be, pray?
I'm also the lug mistress of the Lincoln Lug Meeting.
A lug mistress? What is a lug for those of us who don't know what a lug is?
Lug is a Linux user group where like-minded people meet and talk about open source projects.
Okay, and where is this group?
In Lincoln, which is where I'm based.
Okay, and how did you get involved in that, or is there anything you want to talk to us about?
How I got involved with it was through a couple of years of coming to Crunchbang, listening to John O'Bacon and the book with about like giving back to the community, so I wanted to do that. Married to Philip Newborough, who is the distribution editor of Crunchbang, and I know, because he's the techie side of the family, I suppose I wanted to give something back to the community. So I wanted to set up the Linux user group in Lincoln.
So this was there was no user group there prior to this. Okay, how did you go about actually doing that?
Well, at first I approached the Lincolnshire Lug, which had been solely been run on the mailing list and was, and to all intents and purposes, a dead lug. And I suppose I tried to reinvigorate it and try to get it going and sort of said, you know, enthusiasm and I'll do this and I'll do that. And I met a lot of hostility.
In the form of, or can we not say?
In the form of, this is my toy box and I don't want to share. You know, I'd come along to a very, what I viewed as a dead lug and a dead mailing list and sort of said, you know, I know the mailing list is here, you know, how about if I set up a meeting, you know, would you let me do this? And they sort of said, no.
Okay.
So I set my own up.
So you set your own up. Okay, excellent. And you were there all by yourself in a room, or how did that go?
Well, no, initially, it was me and Philip. We just, last September, in fact, it's like nearly a year now, we're coming up to the anniversary. So in August, this was all happening on the mailing list. And in September, I picked a date, the third Wednesday, and I said, we will be at this venue at this time. If you want to come along,
come along,
and I fully expected it just to be me and Philip.
And did you had you set up another website, another mailing list at this stage? What did you need to do?
All I'd done was contacted lug.org.uk to set up a Lincoln Lug mailing list and to set up a domain. I just set up a page that redirected, that just said, you know, we are here, we're meeting at this time. And that was it. And I just tweeted it out and Google Plus. I set up a Twitter account. I set up a Google Plus page and just tweeted it.
Okay. What was that website that you went to? Is it an overall website for lugs in the UK?
Yes, that's right. All of the lugs, they are all of their details are held on lug.org.uk domain. And if you click there, you know, the lug meeting that's happening in your area, you can very easily find out your lug and also neighbouring lugs as well.
Okay, so you're sitting there in the bar. Was it a bar?
It was, actually. It was the bowling alley, because it does free Wi-Fi, free parking, really nice food, really nice beer, and I know the owners of the venue because my daughter bowls for Lincolnshire.
That's actually a very good place to have it. You can shoot a few spares and talk about Lennoxes.
Absolutely, yes. And they made us feel really welcome. So, yeah, that first day, I just fully expected it to be Philip and I. But actually, we had a couple of members from the old Lincolnshire mailing list. They had come along. And we'd also attracted some friends from Hull Lug. So it's almost become a bit of an exchange programme. So we've got the Lincoln Lug and the Hull Lug, and each month we travel to each other's lug meetings.
Okay, that is fantastic. So you've rejuvenated two areas.
Yeah, actually, Dave Harding, he's the lug master of the Hull Lug. He has actually said that due to the enthusiasm that he has seen on the mailing list for me trying to invigorate a Lincoln Lug, gave him some renewed enthusiasm. He invigorated the Hull Lug, and actually we've become, like I say, almost like a joint lug. We are separate, but we join together for so much.
And actually no reason why not, you know, seeing as a geographic thing. And I want to just put in a note here that there's nothing like getting, you know, when you're sad and down, you go, why am I doing this? And somebody just sends an email to you saying, thank you very much for the work you're doing. And I like to ask people listening to the show to send off an email to other hosts who you've listened to a show, they've inspired you. Just a 2 minute thank you for that show, it really helps. Sorry, I distracted. Back to the star of our show.
No, that's fine. No, actually, you're right, because when I was initially, I was so fired, full of enthusiasm, and I was emailing the Lincolnshire Lug, and I was saying, look, I'm prepared to do this, I'll organise the meetings, I'll set them up. But there was a definite feeling of, you're not coming to play with my toys.
Yeah.
And that really hurt, because there was a lot of people on the mailing list were saying, you know, they were like shooting me down, and I couldn't understand why, you know, for something that is supposed to be so free and open, and yet they weren't prepared to share. And I really couldn't understand that thinking, that, you know, they wanted to be a lug, but actually didn't want to do anything about meeting in real life. And that's fine for them, let them do that. But I wanted to meet some friends, I wanted to talk to some people, I wanted to get techie, I wanted to meet like-minded people over and share an experience over a beer or over a meal. So I thought, stuff it. So I did it.
Excellent. So, you know, what's the message for our listeners coming from your experiences? One, I suppose, not get downhearted.
Absolutely. I think the message is, because there's been a lot of talk, you know, with the likes of, you know, Facebook chat, Google Hangout now, are lugs dead? And a lot of people are saying, you know, the lugs have had their time. But I think some renewed enthusiasm for lugs, I think if you define what you want out of your lug, and if you're not too prescriptive about what you want out of your lug, if you just go with the flow, you know, you can meet a whole bunch of new friends, and that's what we've done in Lincoln.
Okay, fantastic. I'm just going to end it there. It's fantastic. Can you tell me what the website is for your, you know, if somebody wants to get involved, can you give me a website? Or indeed, if anybody's they're thinking how they're going to set up a lug in their area, how do I contact you?
Okay, if you go on to lug.org.uk, certainly for us in Lincoln, we are in the East Midlands, so you'd click the East Midlands tab. But if you want to set up your own lug, all of the instructions on how to do it are there, and they certainly helped me.
Okay, thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the evening. How's it going, Chris? How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Loving it here at All Camp this year. It's been really good. Met lots of good people, really friendly.
I should probably tell people, actually, it's over. We're in the restaurant on, when is it, Sunday night?
Sunday night, yeah. We had a good day today. There was lots of talks on, lots of fun and games. Not as much dancing from Ken last night.
Yeah. Less said about that, the best. last time we were talking to you, we were talking about the Sulphur Freedom.
Sulphur Freedom Day, yeah.
Sulphur Freedom Day in Dundee. So what's been going on since in your life?
The Sulphur Freedom Day event went really, really well, really great. The biggest change I suppose that we've done at the moment is we've moved from being a society that was at a university to a private and our limited company.
A limited company?
We're now a limited company called the Software Society Limited. We have a directorship who meet once a month to make sure that we're meeting the goals of the society, which would be helping talks to educate people, trying to set up some events to show people how to use computers, how to install Linux, how to set them up, and any other sort of ideas we can do.
Would that be a for-profit company or as a non-profit organisation?
It's a non-profit organisation.
Okay, and that seems like a strange thing to do, to go from a Linux group to actually start a company.
We're a limited company by guarantee, so we guarantee the membership. The membership's always guaranteed. Any money paid beyond that, I think it's usually about £11 we're paying. £10 of that's administration fee, but that goes to help out organising events and help to subsidise some of the events a little bit to help more people get involved. We're currently meeting in a coffee shop, which allows people under the age of 18 to come to the meetings.
Very nice.
And things. Although, as per usual, after the meetings, we usually head
for a few bevvies
afterwards. Yeah. But we're trying to be as open as possible to both the younger generation and the older generation.
Who decided to set up a non-profit company, you know, from a LUG standpoint? I mean, it's a great idea, but it's a fantastic idea, actually.
The main idea we had a few issues with the university and politics and things. Not that I'm going to get into that. But when we came out of that, we decided we had a structure from the university of a president, a vice president, and a secretary.
Yeah.
And they were kind of not in charge in as a sense, but they were like who the community spoke to, and then they made sure it happened. And we found that really useful. So when we decided what we were going to do, it seemed like a good idea to have to get a bank account so that you could put money into that to provide it. But to need a bank account, we had to be
something. Yes.
And at the time, accompanied by guarantee, the limit by guarantee seemed to be a good idea.
So then you have to publish your accounts, everything has to be open, above board, that sort of thing.
Yeah, we have to have a regular meeting once a month. All the receipts have to go through that with the treasurer. We have to have put our accounts out and everything, which means we're very open in that. We're quite transparent. It's quite easy to find out what's been going on money-wise and other things like that.
And have you found any difficulties in setting that up? Any unforeseen issues?
No, we've had no problems with setting it up at all. We haven't had any issues at all. There was a few issues with different directors maybe not necessarily pulling the weight initially and stuff, and that had to be sorted out and things like that. But we've now got a good team backing it. Everyone's pulling the weight, getting things done, and we're moving forward.
Would this be something that you would advise other LUGs to do?
We've only been doing it for five, 6 months.
I'll hold off the question until next year. How about that?
And it definitely seems to be working for us at the moment.
Okay.
We haven't had any problems. We're still meeting every 2 weeks, pretty much without fail.
Yeah.
And we're getting people talking. We're maybe a little harsh with that, kind of push people a little bit. But we find that once people have started done a talk, they're willing to come back and do another one.
Yeah,
we're getting more and more people, more and more.
I'm a big fan myself for pressing the record button and getting it out there. Okay. Sorry, you were showing me a video earlier on. We'll put a link into the show notes if that's okay.
Yeah, no problem at all. Yeah. Recently we did a talk on the Raspberry Pi.
Brilliant.
Basically giving you a basic background of its history, why it came about, what its hardware was, the hardware capabilities were, and then a little introduction to some of the newer features like the Scratch for kids building applications and stuff. I mean, I think there's a 7-year-old girl recently built her own version of Pac-Man using Scratch, which is like the jigsaw puzzle pieces,
which is great.
But what I wanted to do was show some people a bit more complicated stuff, so we got some Python involved using the RPI GPIO project, which is available on GitHub. And they provide a library so you can run it in user space and connect to the inputs and outputs of these GPIO pins on the Raspberry Pi.
Yes, very good, yeah.
So we've got a button in the demo that demonstrates. You've got a button with an LED that lights hardware-wise when the button's pressed. So that shows you the hardware's working and the button's being pressed. That's registered by the software. Python adds to a counter and then outputs those values on 4 LEDs up to the value of 16. So as it counts up, it goes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all the way up to 16, and then resets.
That seems like a nice introductory project. Was it difficult to set up?
It's very easy to set up. The wiring diagram is very simple. We provided that as well. I've got slides for it. I'll get them in the show notes.
Okay, great.
And in that, we've got a wiring diagram for it with the pins we've connected to, and the code's available on GitHub as well. Just to give a demo and get people started to show them that hardware is possible. It's not just about software or running XBMC to play your movies or something.
As we said before here, Raspberry Pi is all about the connectors, all about the...
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's not the only device with GPIO pins. Most devices have GPIO pins on them, but they're not usually documented. This time we have it documented in a reasonably easy format that we can get involved and we can start building our own devices.
Yeah.
I think in the future, as 3D printers are becoming cheaper as well, what's to stop our kids building their own devices, their own cases, their own gadgets?
I think it's the next frontier, actually. So, listen, you got this company for your log and stuff. What do you do to put food on the table now?
I used to work for an animation company. We did some quite big projects. One of the films was Oscar nominated and stuff, which was pretty good. Which has worked out well for me, you know. But I'm finding that I think there's a lot of companies out there that are struggling at the moment, especially in the IT department, as I don't think they can afford to pay a full-time IT guy. So what I'm trying to do now is start a new business to expand on that. And to provide IT support for these small companies.
Yeah.
Even if it's a couple of days a week or a retainer or something so that they can get involved, we can set them up proxies and servers and caching servers and file servers and whatever they need to get them moving forward and then support that.
What's your company?
The company at the moment is called Chrysalis IT Solutions.
Okay.
Chrysalis.com.
I'll put a link in the show notes. It's going well for you?
It's going pretty well at the moment, yeah. We've got a few contracts just now. We're hoping to expand pretty rapidly.
Do you use a lot of open source free stuff in your...
I preferably use open source. If I can use open source, then that's what I'll use. I mean, if a company has already got a system and they want us to work that, we'll work it out. But if we can provide an open source solution that would benefit them more, then that's the plan. Because, I mean, the advantages of not having the licensing costs and... I've always found open source more stable, more reliable, which of course means they don't call me quite as much, but that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Okay, good stuff. Enjoying the show. Have you been to many talks actually?
I went to a good few talks, I think we went to the Enigma talk, which was interesting from a historical point of view and seeing that you can get involved and stuff, which was good. And we saw a few other talks. I think the other ones that stood out, I quite liked the flash talk section, which was quite good.
Yeah.
Because that kind of got a few people involved and getting people in a hurry, quite telling us lots of different subjects about lots of different things in a kind of short period of time. And it was good. Yeah. Gave you a lot to think about in a short time. But I mean, there was a few political talks which were good. Definitely got us thinking about the bigger picture, which a lot of us don't think about when it comes to open source IT and stuff and our own digital rights. Yeah. And what data we're providing to companies and how they're going to use that is a big issue, I think, at the moment.
Yes.
It seems to be moving forward, yeah. I think I've really enjoyed it. There's a great crowd of people. Everybody's been friendly. I definitely think one of the advantages of the conference this year is the fact that we had the hotel that most people were staying at. I think there was something like 180 people at the hotel, which was amazing. But it meant that everybody knew that you could go down to the main area and everyone was there and there was somebody there to talk to. So, people have been really friendly.
The facilities have been absolutely excellent. The uni has been...
The uni's amazing.
You'll be very hard-pressed to top that next year.
It's a pity I can't afford to come down here all the time, but I mean, the fab lab, the fabrication lab that they've built in the university is amazing.
Yeah.
So the equipment they've got in there and the techniques they're building and stuff is amazing. And it's great to see that they're using a lot of open source stuff as well. Because that's what it's about and that's what it's for. The more people use it, the better.
More jobs for us.
Exactly.
Right, listen, we'll let you get back to your dinner, pint, whatever it is at this stage. Thanks very much for the show.
Well, thank you.
We're standing outside having quiet chat outside with
Ian Kloss.
Hi Ian, where have you come from today?
Limerick, Republic of Ireland.
And What's the Linux scene like over there?
There is a small group of us which, you know, try and keep the open source ideals alive in Limerick. There is one guy who is actually very much involved in it, who tries to keep people mostly interested all the time, and, you know, by doing various stuff, you know, Ubuntu meets, you know, lug meets and stuff like that. I don't think we actually have a lug group, but, you know, we have dedicated, interested party of people that try and spread the ideas that we actually, you know, that we all believe in.
Do you have, like, a website or something that you can...
No, there isn't, unfortunately. There's no website, there's no dedicated, no, nothing central, really, at the moment. But, I mean, we do have a conference. I'm not sure what the conference actually is, but it will be in October, which, you know, I can send details on to you as well.
Yeah, please.
Which we apparently do have Mark Shuttleworth coming down to talk.
Okay, well, about what? Just Mark, whatever.
Not entirely sure. Whatever Mark Shuttleworth wants to talk about.
Pretty much. I've been to space. I will talk whatever I want to talk about, I guess.
But no, I mean, there's no organized group. There's a good few of us who believe in it. I mean, there's far more, weirdly enough, there's probably far more Android enthusiasts.
Yeah.
I mean, people who really, you know, love the Android system and understand that it's Linux-based and all that. Then we actually have desktop users who would actually be into, you know, open source software and all that. It does seem to be quite a mobile-based, you know, community in a sense, but we don't have, there's no real huge kind of Apple Mac user base there. There's, you know, the standard Windows that everybody uses, and then there's us, you know, who use Linux. And but there is some people that I have met down there who are actually trying to push it now, business and enterprise, to actually show businesses how they can actually save money, because obviously in Ireland at the moment we have a situation where, you know, money is tight, companies need to save money, and, you know, there is at least a couple of guys down there at the moment who are trying to push forward a whole agenda of free software. This is how you can actually save money without a Microsoft license. And you know, they have some decent ideas and good plans, but as anything in the economy, which has, you know, virtually collapsed, it's difficult to still do. Like, you know, people are still hanging on to what they have at the moment for as long as they can go, you know.
Yep.
So, I mean, you know, it has a start. I think I'll be moving to Cork in September, and I recently found out that UCC, actually University College Cork, actually contribute us to a open source lecturing recording program.
Yeah.
And they actually do have a far more active group down there than we would have in Limerick, which, you know, is a smaller, less active city.
Yeah. Is there a nationwide, any sort of nationwide collective? We've probably earlier in this episode you heard Becky, there's a network for lugs in the UK. Is there sort of equivalent for Ireland?
Yes, we do have an equivalent, but you'll find that it's there'd be a few lug groups, like, you know, and there'd be a, you know, there is a national movement, but I would say it's so much smaller.
Yeah, it's a smaller country.
You know, it's a smaller
mainly
country.
Mainly Dublin,
yeah. Cork. Surprisingly enough, you wouldn't see it much in Galway. I think Sligo have a lug group, weirdly enough. If you look and go all Ireland, obviously Belfast would probably be one which jumps out more. University towns are always going to have it more. Unfortunately, the town I live in, University Town itself, it is, but UL is a very, you know, enterprise business university, unfortunately.
Yes.
So
okay.
I don't think, well, if they can make more money from Windows, that's where they will go, unfortunately.
Okay. Anything else that you want to, any projects coming up, anything that catches your mind?
Well, it's not catching mine, it's actually a project I'm planning to do. I'm, like I say, heading to UCC myself. I'm studying history and archaeology. It's, you know, so far away from anything technological, you know. However, in archaeology there is a number of tools which has to be used, computers these days, reconstruction of sites, of finds and stuff like that. I'm looking, when I go to Cork, to actually do this mainly as much as I can, you know, without actually looking at percentages and stuff like that, as much as I can with free software. Oh, very nice. See if the alternatives are out there. I mean, this is another area which there's not a lot of money invested in it these days. You know, a lot of big digs have already been, and we know we have more coming up. But we need to, you know, look at some ways of making, of saving money, you know, because in the end we're not getting the funding these days from the government. So if I can actually do this course, which is 3 years, and I can only use, you know, open source software, then all the better. Yeah. And I'm hoping to maybe, I'll be suggested the Free Software Foundation have said that, you know, write a blog about it, you know, let us know how you're doing and stuff like that. And, you know, this is something I actually plan to do. You know, it's I need to approach the college at some point as well when I go down and say, look, you know, what do you have open source wise? Because, you know, in the end, universities, they, you know, the open source guys are all computer, you know, they're doing some sort of computer degree. This would be probably one of the first times somebody's come up from doing a history degree, an arts degree, yeah, and turn around and says, look, I want to do this. You know, yeah, can you help me? So, you know, we'll see how that one goes. I mean, it's, you know, it should be interesting because I can't, you know, they might already be, I might go down there and find they're all open source anyway, like, you know, but I severely doubt it. Like, you know, it's, you know, hopeful thinking that's going to be the case. I might be one of the first to actually try and do something like this in UCC itself.
What did you think about camp? Anything?
About what?
Odd camp.
Odd camp. Odd camp. Here we are, here. Obcamp was brilliant. Again, everybody who's organised it has done a brilliant job. This is the first time I've been, but I heard about, you know, how well it went last year. Obcamp this year in Liverpool, spiritual home in a sense, I suppose. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Might not have gone to all the lectures I would have hoped to have gone to, or the talks. Next year, hopefully, might do a talk myself after the first year after college and see how it goes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've really enjoyed it. The only thing I would turn around and say is, please supply coffee for free.
And with that, thank you very much for the interview, and look forward to hearing next year about your software.
We'll see how the adventures go.
Okay, cool. Okay, this is officially the last recording I'm going to do.
Wow, forever.
Well, at least for this. And I'm outside talking to Fab. How are you doing, Fab?
I'm good. Quite tired, but good.
Was the whole thing as short for you as it was for me?
Yeah, completely. I mean, I just ran around. I didn't see a talk, obviously. And yeah. Just, you know, yeah. And I'm really tired.
Yes. And you just had the big move, obviously, from Germany?
Yeah, well, I moved, it must be 2 months ago now. I moved from Germany to London for a new job. Well, first real job, really. Yes. Tech journalism, yay.
Oh, it's cool.
And it was obviously a big move and everything, and quite taxing, but it all got together with the OCAM thing, you know. It's kind of massed together,
yeah,
and all just coalesced on these 2 months, and it's just got too much, I think.
Yes, I know, it's freaky out. Because we had DJ, we interviewed DJ here last year on the...
Oh, yes. Yeah, my boss. Okay. Yeah.
Hey, he's your boss?
He's my editor.
Did he interview you last year?
Odd Camp,
that would be cool, the inside track.
You mean, did I interview?
Did you get the job?
No, I didn't. I got the job much later.
Yeah, okay.
Basically, I started working for them in March from Germany, Germany. So I worked 3 months, basically... from home,
yeah.
And then I moved over. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I didn't even know him. I saw him at last OCamp, but that's the first time I met him. I didn't know who he was.
Yeah, every one of these events, I do a private competition myself. Who is the best T-shirt? And he won last.
Oh
year.
Yeah, he's
had on his T-shirt. I see dead pixels.
Yeah, yes, he's got awesome T-shirts. He's like he beats anybody with geeky T-shirts and with tablets. He had like 7 tablets.
Yeah,
or something.
Yeah. I had never heard of the H before that, and then I was subscribed to it. They have some really good stuff.
Lots of people don't know about us, and they should. I say this because I work there, but still, I get quite a lot of on Twitter and whatever. I get people like they sent me links, and they're like, you should talk about the story on Linux Outlaws, and you should, or have you seen this? And then I have to go, well, actually, I wrote about this two weeks, more like 3 days or something ago, and then I sent them a link to us. So.
No, the HTH is an excellent resource. I'm glad, really, I met DJ last year and was following them. So tell me, I'm not going to bore you with any. How was Outcamp?
For me, it was awesome. I didn't see any. You know, I don't know how the talks went, but for me personally, even when I go to these conferences now, just go to them. For me, it's more the people and meeting people, and I think that was good. I got lots of people telling me and other people, and you know, on Twitter and stuff, that was the biggest thing for them, meeting people, and I think it was really good. It seems to get better every year. I don't know how, but
the venue was
awesome. Dan did a great job, by the way.
I must say, hats off to Dan. The hotel has been the weirdest hotel I've ever.
It's really weird.
It is, like, honestly, people, just to give you an idea, if you think, go rewind a Hercule Poirot, type hotel.
It's like from the 1850s. It's like
grand rooms with grand.
But it's not like one of these things where they converted it to a hotel where you can see it was a mansion it was built as a hotel. But in like the, if you think, it kind of reminds you of the Titanic. If you it's
very
like
much.
That kind of like it's Art Deco. It's like they have this huge. I don't know what it is, like a ballroom or something.
Yeah, and it's just like a hall,
chandeliers,
and it's just a like an avenue to other ballrooms.
It's amazing.
I mean, the walk down to the venue last night was like walking through the twilight zone. So you go down this stairs, you go left.
Yeah.
There's four more ballrooms, and there's four more ballrooms.
They have all these rooms, and it's quite weird because it's falling apart a bit, and it's actually they're letting it. I don't know. They're not looking after it as much as, well. Maybe I'm used. You know, I'm German, and we are quite fastidious with these things. Yeah, and so maybe. But it's still a cool hotel, and the venue was awesome. I mean, they gave us the venue for free. They did a lot of work for us. They put up signs and everything, and they were just extremely helpful on the day as well. I mean, we had the technician from the venue. We had ladies sitting at the reception the whole time, and it's a university. It's a Liverpool John Moores University, and it's one of their buildings. But you know, they were there on the weekend and just helping us out and stuff.
I don't know. I mean, obviously, you want to move Oddcamp around, and I know.
I don't know if we're going to move it around. I would do it here again. Yeah,
you'd be really hard pressed to beat that venue.
The thing is, the venues have gotten better every year.
Yes.
I really love the Maltings. The last year's venue, yeah, we said this is like the best venue. There's no way we're going to be. Well, the thing with Oddcamp is it lands wherever somebody on the ground is taking the biggest responsibility. You know, you have to have somebody there who goes to the venue and clears all these things up, and so this year it was Dan again, so that's basically how it comes. We're not moving it on purpose, really,
but it's at the same time I can imagine the absolute stress of doing something like that. You kind of want a year off.
Dan really downplays it. But it was, I think it was a massive amount of stress and work. And Dan and Les Pounder, I've got to give a shout out to Les Pounder. He is so organized. He did, you know, we had so much crew. That crew was everywhere.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and they help you with everything, and it's really cool. So I got like really that, and I just saw, I gotta say, I basically just saw happy people that were there, and everybody seemed to have a good time, which is the best thing. You know, you get these, you hear these things, like these days you have these conferences, and there's like this sexual harassment stuff going on, and you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's just, that is such, Oddcamp has such an awesome atmosphere.
Did you notice as well the breadth of people? There were lots of young people, lots of older people, you would not think, okay, 100% geek, right from the oldest to the youngest.
Of course.
All
very different.
Yeah,
we always had that from the beginning. I think it's a factor of our two podcasts being very different. Linux Outlaws and Ubuntu UK podcast have very different audiences, and we both pull from these audiences. And I think it's always worked very well. You know, they're kind of, you'd think they clash.
Yes.
You know, because they're kind of different mentalities, but it always works out well. And if you have a place where you get people together that are different, everybody learns something, you know. And I think that, I mean, we, and it's not like, it's also because it's not a free software conference. in itself. I mean, we had Open Heart where we had culture stuff. We always have culture stuff. I mean, we had, you know, I tried to get this, it was a bit of a fail. I tried to get this Minecraft thing going and I figured out it was a lot harder than I thought. But for example, we had people commenting on that it's not free software. And, you know, we, as the organizers, always said, well, OCaMP is not only a free software conference. We're much about free software, open source. But we're also about open hardware and stuff where there's just not free software involved. And we don't want to exclude somebody from that. Because I think we have this mentality, and Dan has talked about this on Linux Outlaws a lot, that if you get people in there that are maybe not that well known, well, they don't know open source that much, and they come there for another reason, and they see all the open source stuff, then they...
You pull them in.
Yeah, you might pull them in.
And I mean, even Richard Stallman says, Steam coming to Linux is a good thing in general. You know, it's bad, it's proprietary software and evil.
But it'll get...
Now they're using more open source software. Free software, as he would say.
Yeah. I mean, the thing we have with Linux and open source is that I think there's a huge number of people out there that have no idea what it is, and they don't come in contact with it. I mean, even if you have what some people would call the worst case, if you have people that only come to it because it's free as in beer, I think that's good as well, because that's... I can't really remember how I got into it, but that was definitely a factor. So I mean, and that's something, you know, that's something that pulls people in, and they will then, I mean, not everybody will, but quite a few people will then, you know, hear about all the other stuff that's involved.
Yeah,
you know?
And then they can make up their own mind.
Yeah, it's like freedom and the kind of morality that's involved there, and you know.
And it's compatible with, I mean, the lady who was converting T-shirts and, you know, the old camp T-shirts.
It's really funny. Yeah, I've been to bags.
Yeah, but
stuff.
It's like there are a lot of people out there into the green culture, into the recycle and not do the waste, who are very compatible and very open to like the old campion thing. And I thought it was great to have those people.
Yeah, and it's OCaMP is a bit weird because, like, for example, the name has nothing to do with what it really is, and we just came up with
it's
the name.
Too late
it's
now,
just,
officially, yes.
And it's just sticking. I mean, we had Stephen Fry doing a video and like going on about OCaMP, we can't change the name now, you know.
Yes.
Stephen Fry knows the name, that's it.
Yeah.
But it's a weird mixture. You really gotta be there, and I think I do think it's an important event, because here in the UK, I mean, I'm amazed. It is the biggest. You know, I didn't want to say like we're the biggest open source event or whatever, but we are. There's really, you know, we basically took over from like Radio Live, and it was a big thing because people were saying we can't let like Radio Live go away, and then there's nothing there. So we started it from somebody's got to pick up the slack. That was the idea.
Yeah, stepping up to the plate. Actually, this year I must say was the first year where I thought, do you know, my wife would actually like to come and see this. And then I go around to something else and go, you know, she'd really like this.
I think it really worked out this year that we had other stuff there as well. You know, we had all the hardware stuff and people, you know, they were like, I don't know.
Even Dan's mom had his nephew.
Oh, yeah. But the thing is, Dan's mom is a proper
she's
geek.
Gorgeous, yeah.
But she's also very geeky. Yeah. But, you know, we had all this stuff. I mean, Katie, my girlfriend, was coming along, and we actually...
Our English is fantastic, by the way. Picking up an English accent, as I've noticed.
Yeah. Well,
she's
very humble in this kind of things, but yeah. I think she's really doing well. But anyway, we had, you know... It's stupid to say, you know, it sounds weird to say this, but I always look around, and when I see that there's a lot of women there, it's kind of, you know, for a geek conference, it's still a abysmally low percentage for anything else, but for a geek conference it's actually not bad, and I like that. And whatever it is about OCaMP, I mean, there's so much stuff going on. I think that's what it is. You know, we have like the Geeknik and whatever, and Dan came up with all this weird stuff that comes around. You know, goes on. You know, in the evening, the music stuff, it's just
brilliant.
Just it's some work works.
Music.
Yeah.
So right, okay, enough about that. How have you? How are you long enough here in the UK to be adjusted to life?
God. Well, the thing is, I don't know if I lived in Australia for quite a while, so I got used to that. I'm really used to being in another country. That, you know, since Australia, basically.
I suppose you're more prepared for.
I was there in school. Basically, I went for a year to in a host family. They dropped me in a host family where they don't speak a word of German. So I got like the proper culture shock thing. And after that, it's really hard to face me. I mean, There's a lot less differences between the UK and Germany than there's between Australia and Germany. So the biggest thing for me adapting is actually London, because I'm not a big city guy.
Yeah.
I always thought Berlin, I'd never move to Berlin. That's way too big. I don't want to go there. And now basically I really wanted this job. I thought the job was brilliant. And I said, well, if they want me to move to London, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make this happen. And I did. But now I'm basically in this huge city and I'm trying to adapt. I'm kind of lucky because I live in Wimbledon, and I've learned that London is incredibly green, for example. There's like all these parks and stuff that I had no idea. I mean, London has a lot of facets to it that you don't see if you're just there as a tourist, and I'm kind of just discovering that. But it's coming together well. I think it's kind of working.
Practical things, power cords.
I don't know. The power cords are not. It's like if you're German, there's some things that are just you know, is with every you come from one country and you only notice the peculiarities about your country if you go somewhere else.
Yes.
And you see the difference. I mean, one of the things, let me put it this way. In Germany, we isolate houses a lot. We have lots of laws that are like, you know, for green housing and stuff.
Insulation.
And then put heat insulation everywhere. Yeah. And like, they actually have now, if you have older houses, you're forced by law to renovate them and put insulation in and save power and stuff. And I moved into this flat, and my father came up, and they brought my stuff up, and I wanted to put a cupboard on the wall. So my father takes a drill and just drills into the wall, and the drill just goes, and it's gone. And we're like, that's weird. So it's basically a plasterboard, and it went through the plasterboard. There was nothing. So in Germany, you'd have plasterboard, and then you'd go right into stone, you know, in whatever the stone they use for the walls. And then you put your whatever in there. But that, you know, there was nothing there. And we're looking out the window, looking at the wall, like through the, we're like, the wall is this thick and there's only plasma. So we figured out it's basically just bricks. So in the UK, they seem still to build houses, which for Germans, amazing. They build houses by taking bricks, you know, real bricks. In Germany, if you see brick houses, they're actually made out of, you know, they use these stones that are hollow.
For
decades. They're just building houses with that. And then you put insulation on that, and then you put like fake bricks that are really thin, just to put that on the outside so it looks like bricks. And that you won't find, like, you'd be hard-pressed to find a house really built out of bricks in Germany anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was just, like, culture shock. It was like, what? How am I going to put something on the wall here? Yeah. It was like, so we had, you know, we used, like, plasterboard things.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Basically, I think they just had bricks, and then they nailed wooden struts on that, and then put plasterboard on that.
Yeah. And it might be insulation in between. Not quite
there often. There's no insulation. Nothing, looked in, it's like
that's zero. That's called the air insulation, and I'm doing air quotes.
Yeah.
Earth,
so it's basically
nothing.
Yeah. In Germany, that would that's probably houses like that. But you know, that's one of the things that's really very.
I actually
different.
Think that's a good thing. You know, it freaks you out after a while. But I think insulating a house is generally a good thing. But taking that example aside, it's a good thing to go to another country, see different things.
Yeah.
You assume so much about where you're living, and you go like. When I went to the Netherlands and found simply that they built the house, they built the windows. When they're building a house, they build the window frames first. And then build the house around the window frames. I mean, you think about it, that's so much more logical than building the wall and cutting the hole in it. But anyway, that has nothing to do with that. What do you miss from home?
Well, the one thing is bread. If you're outside of Germany, there's no way to get bread like in Germany. I mean, lots of people think I miss beer, but I really like the beer in the UK. You know, it's very different. There's a lot more variety.
So nice real ales. I must say, the hotel doesn't have.
No, the hotel doesn't. No, that was. But
some might say it's diluted urine. But however.
But around here in Liverpool, there's lots of cool stuff. I do like the beer. I mean, the one thing you can't expect. I'm quite a Pilsner fan, and you can't expect. A Pilsner in the UK. You know, if you're outside Germany, I think they don't. Yeah, well, it's not from Germany. You know, it's Poland, you know, Czechoslovakia, all those countries. But in the UK, you just can't expect proper Pilsner. So, but it's okay. I can get that when I'm back in Germany.
I have to ask the question. You know, I do. I can't help myself. Oddcamp 13, is it coming?
Oh my God, that's like the.
It's too early to say.
Yeah, no, we really don't want to commit. But you know, the thing is.
I think it's getting to such a stage, it's unlikely that it's not going to happen.
Immense pressure from everybody now to have this, because as I said, if it goes away, The UK basically loses a big thing, and there's like the question for us is why it's difficult for us. It's because we are these two podcasts, and we just sit together and we just basically have a mailing list, and we discuss, and then somebody basically needs to, you know, put his balls.
I'm gonna do it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Basically, put your money where your mouth is, and put your sputs on the line, to say, and that's always a bit, you know. Because
is it getting now big enough where you can take in somebody else and start? Okay, you have your two podcasts, and then just have like a committee that will come together, external people, like the crew concept,
a little bit bigger. We already have that. I mean, we basically we already outsource, if so to speak, so much stuff. I mean, the crew was involved before. We have people helping us. I mean, John Spix writing Campfire Manager and all that kind of stuff. We have that is really not the problem. But in the end, there is one person who's on the ground, who's basically taking this responsibility. I mean, Dan also put up money for this, that we get back. That's why we sell merchandising and stuff, to get the money back. But somebody needs, and before that, it was Tony Whitmore, did a lot of that. You know, you put stuff online. Somebody needs to do it. So basically, what we always do is like we let this rest for at least 3 months. Well, usually it's like around Christmas. It comes up, you know. There's so many people. There's people asking for the podcast, and around Christmas, it comes up again. And then we'll decide. I'm pretty sure there will be.
I need to ask is my wife works on a 6-month schedule, so I kind of need to plan the holiday. So around Christmas, I'll bring up the question again.
I know that we are well aware of the scheduling thing, but Ocamp is just so in that respect so fluid because we never know who's going to do it, so we don't know where it's going to be. I'm split on this because I saw that Dan did so much work. And I really don't want him to do it again next year because he, I think, needs a rest and well deserves it. But, I mean, from talking, we all like the venue so much.
It might be nice to get to look now specifically at universities and other locations, perhaps.
Yeah, that's definitely one thing. I mean, that's a good thing. I mean, the thing is the venue is the biggest cost by far. If we can get it like we did this year, if we can get the venue for free, that makes a lot of things a lot easier because then you don't need to worry that much about sponsorship. Yeah. You know, the thing we got sponsorship for this year is all extra stuff. It's still needed.
Nice.
You know, it's good. We need it. But it's like if you get the venue, you're like there's like this huge block of concrete.
Yeah.
Because before you need to get sponsors, you need to get enough money up front from people who are committing, and then you can go get a venue. So if you have the venue first, it starts off on a lot easier, footing.
Listen, I'm going to let you go. This is the last interview. I want to thank you. Oh, first of all, I want to just take the opportunity to thank that guy who donated the Nexus 7.
Oh, yes.
That was the coolest thing out.
I don't even know
his name.
But no, but he was great. So we were giving away a Nexus 7 that we got for sponsorship, and the guy just donated it back to us, which I thought, I couldn't believe it. And then we auctioned it off.
Moment of confusion, like, what do you mean? Do you want somebody else to
really? Yeah.
No, auction it off.
But there was two, you know, it was twofold because he gave it back and we auctioned it off.
Well, it was twofold because you got it from
Adam Sweet when his company, Transitive Technologies, was really great. And they gave us that. And then he gave it back and then we auctioned it off. And the guy who bought it like ridiculously over the price. He could have just bought it on the Play Store just to support. I mean, he's just, you know, we have so many people really helping us out and really showing that they want this event. And that's basically what makes us put it on over and over again, because there's people that come there, they say they like it, they say it on Twitter, you know, there's people that really have a good time, and that's the thing that once you make, you know, that basically motivates everybody to do it again.
Okay.
It's basically like podcasting. I mean, that's what you do. You don't do it for money. You do it, you know, if you have people who come up to you, you know, at these events and say, we really like what you're doing. I mean, you must get the same thing.
Well, this year was for the first time actually that somebody's come up, and it's been a bit embarrassing actually.
Well, yeah, it's a bit, yeah, it feels weird, but it's kind of that thing that keeps you going. At least that's what, you know, what keeps me going, because if I'd be feeling like nobody's gonna listen to Lynx Outlaw, for example, then, you know, nobody's gonna want it, then why would you keep doing it?
Okay, thank you very much. Shake your
no
hand
worries.
Here shaking the hand of everybody involved in the whole thing.
It was great fun.
It was actually it was unbelievably short. I don't know why. I was just went into the raffle thing and was going, what? It's over.
Yeah, I felt like this as well. That's one thing I have to say. I felt in this hole. Actually know this from the I was involved with Shakespeare Company in Bonn, and they have this thing we call this the production hole.
Yeah.
Like when you do this production, you put on this play, and then you, 7 days where you produce this play, and then after it's over, you met all these people, you spent so much time with them putting this play together, and afterwards just like over, and you feel like,
Okay.
Yeah, and I felt like that with
Okay. I really had that, but then
that's a
we
good
came
sign
down
though.
Here to the Leaf people. And I said it earlier, there must be models in here working. Yeah. And they're really so nice. They've been sponsoring the tea and stuff, or they've been doing the shop.
Yeah. It's something Dan again found. Yeah.
People got some food into them, and people had a chance to say goodbye and kind of walk away. And
yeah,
it really just given me a sense of closure. And that's why I'm now turning this off and putting the microphone
away. That's a good
point. And ladies and gentlemen, tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of Hacker Public Radio. Liverpool out.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HBR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Share Alike, 3.0 license.